must be a Kremlin agent to say that.
Well, you know, you just got to know nothing about military information or tactics. That's what you have to do to say that. You just have to know nothing.
So the idea that
is clearly what you do.
Yeah. Well,
you've got so many facts wrong. It's hard to know where to even start.
You think Ukraine is winning the war? In which direction is the front line moving, Dan? Has it moved westward or eastward?
It depends on where you're looking at. I hate to break it to you, but it depends on where you're looking at. And the ratios of Russian deaths to Ukrainian deaths, it's like 4-1. You just don't know what you're talking about. You've never fought anything.
I fought a lot of things. I fought a lot of things.
Oh, you fought a lot of things?
Just because you were in the military doesn't make you an expert. I'm sorry to say that Donald Trump
I don't need
Trump
to be an expert. I just know basic facts and I have all the briefings on it.
Clearly, Russia is winning the war. The Ukrainians don't even want to go and fight this war any longer. They're fleeing the country.
It's a war of attrition with a stalemate. That's what we're looking at right now. That's the most honest way to look at it.
Here's the thing about that. No matter what you think about, is this: if a U.S. congressman, doesn't know what the hell is going on, if a U.S. congressman can be deceived and lied to and be so uninformed, what chance do the rest of us stand? Think about that for a minute. I mean, here's this guy, Dan Crenshaw, essentially saying that, oh no, Russia's not winning this war. And listen, it's not about who's winning the war. It's about facts, right? And here's why this is so important. And I wanted to just, you know, fall out of my couch when I was watching that the other night. Here's the thing about this. I grew up in a communist country. Right. I was born in Cuba. Right. Cuba's a communist country. And then I came to Miami with my parents, and the whole conversation all my life in Miami has always been about, man, what a great thing that we live in America. Free speech. People here are allowed to know what's going on. You know, nothing is kept from us. We know the score when you live in America. I feel so sorry for my cousins in Cuba who don't know what's happening. And the government bullshits them all the time. And this is what I grew up with. And this is, by the way, what most of us grew up with. But me in particular, because I was born into this, right? Can I tell you something? Here's where we are right now. You probably know this, but I'll break it to you in case you don't. In this country today, I would say we're less informed than the people of Cuba. Yeah, where I came from. We're less informed than the people of Russia. We're less informed than most of the people in places like South Africa, parts of Africa, parts of Latin America. Yeah, we're less informed. And that's kind of what proves it right there. And if you heard, I don't know if you picked it up in the conversation, but at one point he says, I get the briefings on this. I get the briefings on it. And I say, yeah, exactly. Those briefings, that's the problem. Who are those briefings coming from, right? So how do we get to this point? Let me introduce you to my guest. Rachel Blevins is an independent journalist who has worked with me at RT, now has a widely popular podcast, Rachel Blevins Sanctioned. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we get to reunite. It's been a few years. I know we've both been off on our own journeys, so I'm glad that we get to come together again.
Well, it's funny, and I've mentioned this before. I'm doing this show Suzanne and I have this really nice little 5-acre estate down here in Fort Lauderdale. It's a ranch, really. We've got horses, and we actually have some goats. So, yeah, you might hear one of them in the background. But here I am doing the show out of here, which is great, by the way, and very freeing. But it sure would be nice to be able to continue a show I had on RT where I was reaching tens of millions of people, which the Biden administration told me that if I keep doing that show, they'll put me in jail. So I had to stop doing it. So once again, going back to what I was just talking about with this Dan Crenshaw dude, we think we're so free in this country. We think we get all the information. I got to call bullshit. We don't. And I'm not sure. I think you've got a pretty good handle on this, given that you've been sanctioned yourself, right?
Right. And yeah, looking at this current situation, and I'm with you. I mean, we're almost at the 3-year anniversary of when RT America shut down. And that was the kind of larger than life production that brought us all to DC. And then you fast forward a few years, and it wasn't enough for the Biden administration to just go after that company and that funding. No, they had to go after any Russian media funding that still existed in this country, even though every company that was receiving funding was registering with FARA, right? They were going through all of the steps, jumping through all of the hoops that the U.S. government was requiring of them. And when we look back to where we are now and kind of the media landscape, as you were noting there, for someone like Dan Crenshaw to claim that, oh, you know, Ukraine is winning the war, what he's really saying is that NATO, therefore the United States, is winning this war. And there is no world, no briefing in which that is possibly accurate. I mean, I've followed this, and I know you have too, for the last 3 years. And to say that Ukraine is in a dire position right now would be an understatement. Even our mainstream media here in this country, they are openly admitting that Kiev is dealing with manpower shortages and weapon shortages. And they've been saying this for months now. Those are problems that Russia on its end is not dealing with whatsoever. And on top of that, I think that the U.S. wants to look at this war and they want to think about it in terms of, oh, well, you know, Russia didn't roll into Kiev on day one and they didn't topple Zelensky. And it's like, yeah, that's because Russia did not choose to, right? They chose to fight this war of attrition, to fight this long, brutal, bloody battle in which they would grind down Kiev's military, and particularly that was their choice. And so the U.S., we're looking at it from our perspective, and Dan Crenshaw certainly is so, but even from Washington's perspective, I still don't see how you could consider what is happening in Ukraine right now a victory for the United States whatsoever.
You know what I found too, after working with Russians? I mean, when I first started working at RT and I met you, at first I was like a little sheepish about it. Like, I'm working for the fucking Russians. Oh my God, this is a little weird. Who are these people? I was very doubtful, not so willing to trust at first. You know what I've learned since then? Let me tell you, I have found the Russians to be extremely matter of fact, extremely straightforward, almost painfully so in terms of their honesty, and very willing to be transactional about everything. I find that's kind of Putin's personality too, by the way. So you make a great point that it's not about, you don't want to believe Rachel Blevins or Rick Sanchez. Don't believe Rachel Blevins or Rick Sanchez. Say that we're full of shit. That's fine. Here's what you just said, Rachel, which is very important. It's the New York Times that's now writing stories saying that Ukraine is getting its ass kicked. It's the Economist. It is Le Monde. It is the BBC. It is The Guardian. These are Western newspapers who a year and a half ago were all cheerleading Ukraine because they were kicking the shit out of Russia, and they were writing it in big, bold headlines. Now, they, in the last weeks and months, have been writing headlines that say just the opposite, that say basically, you know, that Ukraine is running out of soldiers, that the offensive on the part of the Russians is continually moving westward, that Prokhorst and other places like that are about to go down. I mean, it's all there. Don't take it from me. Take it from these Western media outlets. That's why I'm wondering, how in the hell does Dan Crenshaw live in a world where he doesn't even read that material, right?
Oh, yeah. And he seems to also live in this world and this school of thought. And this is also reflected in some members of the Trump administration, we should note, which is we just have to put more pressure on Russia to drag them to the negotiating table, right? We just have to put a few more sanctions or give Kiev more weapons. We just have to do more, as if the Biden administration making Russia the most sanctioned nation in the world wasn't enough. That didn't do it. But exactly as you're noting there, Vladimir Putin has been very upfront with exactly what he's been looking for this entire time. If you look back to his speeches 3 years ago, 8 years ago, he is mentioning the same security concerns the entire time. He's saying, look, the NATO alliance is expanding. They're getting right up to our doorstep. They want Ukraine to be included in that alliance. That mm-hmm. is a red line for us, and no one is listening for us to us. So when you look at just how upfront Russia has been this entire time, it's like, yeah, the U.S. government can try to distort that. And the U.S. is great at propaganda. Our country is the best at propaganda. We will look at a situation in a country and go, okay, how can we distort that and make it to be what we want it to be? Russia's not as great at propaganda. They're much more straightforward and much more upfront, which has its
they really are. I almost get the feeling. And the reason I said that, by the way, was from working with my colleagues over there who have been a part of some of the editorial process, although I should tell you this, and I've said this before, but I can never say it enough. I worked at CNN. I had one of the highest rated shows on CNN. I worked at MSNBC. I worked at Fox News. I have more editorial control over my material at RT than I do at those other three places. I pick my staff. I pick my writers. I pick my material. I write my material. I pick my stories. I write my show. Mm-hmm. There it is. And please look it up. I mean, interview the people I've worked with. Look for my producers. Ask them. Ask Rachel. I mean, you know, I couldn't do that at CNN. Are you kidding? I would suggest a guest, and they'd go through them with a fine tooth comb, find one little thing and say, sorry, no, you can't interview him. And I'd always wonder, who are these people sitting on top of this mountain somewhere choosing who can and cannot count on my show? And then later I found out, you know, and now I know it was to a certain extent. I mean, not directly, but to a certain extent, the USAID types. That's who it was. Mm-hmm. There's certain people they didn't want on my show because they didn't want them telling the kinds of truths that you are not, that you and I are now talking about. By the way, I got to show you something else. This is so let's stay on this Dan Crenshaw thing only because it's a lot of fun. Because when you find somebody who is this dumb, I can't help but show it because dumb is funny sometimes. Dumb is funny. Write that down. So here's Crenshaw. Here's Crenshaw now going after Tucker Carlson. While he's being interviewed by some BBC media outlet. Watch this.
I would love to ask Tucker what he thinks that $100 billion should be spent on and if he would vote for it as a conservative. Tucker doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, Tucker likes to visit Moscow and talk about how great the grocery stores are. So I don't really take his advice very seriously.
So Crenshaw is attacking Tucker Carlson in the middle of this interview, and he's all but calling Tucker Carlson an idiot. It gets better, by the way. There's another clip I'm about to show you here after the interview is over with something he says. But what is your take on Crenshaw's beef with Tucker Carlson? Elucidate on that for us, would you, Rachel?
Yeah, it's been kind of hilarious to watch because these two have been at it. They clearly hate each other. I mean, I saw a video clip on X a couple days ago where it was just Tucker Carlson talking about how he hated Dan Crenshaw. And it was like four or five different clips over and over again. And the fascinating thing to me is that these guys are both representatives of sort of within the Republican Party, right? You have yes. kind of the old school of thought, and then you have the new school of thought. You have someone like Tucker Carlson, who he's openly going to Russia. He's sitting down with President Putin. He's having these conversations. He's asking tough questions, and he's giving the American public insight into this is what life is like in Russia. This is what your media will not show you. I'm going to go and show you. And he's willing to do that. Now, he could have walked into a Russian grocery store and it could have been completely empty and he could have had to report on that. But instead, he found the exact opposite. And I, you know, I've lived in Moscow for a year. I can attest to that, right? The grocery stores are full of food. People are going on about their regular lives and living their normal lives there. And not much has changed, especially when you're in
Why do we have to think that if it ain't American, it must suck? Why is that? I bet you there was even a little bit of that before you moved to Moscow in your head. And I watched your report. I love when you're getting on the plane and I watched you sleeping in Istanbul. I thought that was cute. or trying to stay awake, as you said. What is it about the American psyche that makes us think that every place else must suck but ours? We have to be better, or they must not be good. Where does that come from?
It feels like that's kind of the building blocks that hold U.S. foreign policy together, right? Because it's not just the U.S. versus Russia. It's the U.S. versus the rest of the entire world. We have to have this mentality that we are better. And we don't exactly have to have the proof or the evidence. I think that's something that has definitely come up in recent years, right? We don't have to look around and see our city streets and our schools and all of these other things around our society. We can see them falling apart. But as long as we have the mentality that we're better than China or Russia or anywhere else, that's what holds everything together, and that's what allows the U.S. government to spend nearly $1 trillion on our military budget every year, and to then say, you can't ask any questions about what USAID is funding or this other government that we're toppling on the other side of the world. And I do think that that plays into Dan Crenshaw's school of thought, right? Going back to him, going back to the way that he views U.S. foreign policy, he cannot handle the reality that Russia is winning a war that the U.S. is so directly involved in. He just can't, because he knows that the U.S. is there propping up Kiev's government and military, that if the U.S. pulled out tomorrow, that Zelensky's empire would crumble. And because he knows that, his reality cannot include anywhere in it where Russia is possibly winning and where there's nothing that the U.S. can do short of starting World War III and ending life as we know it to then take on Russia. And so it's that kind of fascinating part that is pitting Crenshaw against Carlson. But I think it's also a feud that kind of represents this bigger feud within the Republican Party as a whole.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you think about what Carlson represents, which, you know, there's some things about Tucker that I agree with and some things I've disagreed with over the years. And like, people may watch us and there's some things about you I disagree with and some things about me I disagree with. Even if you ask me on Tuesday, I may disagree with what I said on Monday. So, and that's life. That's the way we are. That's how we grow. That's how we become smart. That's how we share ideas. That's democratizing. Unfortunately, we don't get enough of that in this country. We're told that the Chinese are all sneaky, the Russians are all bullies, the Middle Easterns are all terrorists, the, you know, Africans are all stupid, Latin Americans are all whatever, you know, drug addicts or narco-terrorists. I mean, just fill it in, you know, as you go. And it's really a shame, because if there's one thing I like about my old friend Marco Rubio, the kid from down the neighborhood over here, is I've heard him now, even though he's always been a hawk, express ideas where he's saying, recently when he said, we're now living in a multipolar world. Well, damn it to hell, thank God, hallelujah, finally we're realizing we cannot continue to live in a world where it's either our way or the highway, that there is a BRICS and there is there is now a global South community out there. There are countries who are coming together and questioning whether they just have to follow whatever the hell we and the Brits say. So, and that's kind of where we are right now. By the way, speaking of Tucker, I've got another clip here for you. And Tucker just reached out to me. He's going to have me as his like hour-long guest on his show on the 13th. To speak about these things that you and I are just were talking about. You know, he and I have been talking for a long time. I've known Tucker. I think Tucker's a good guy, and I think he's a straightforward guy, and I think he's a straight shooter. And he and I had talked about some of the things that are going on, where, why is it, I'm an American journalist. I mean, I got, you know, DuPonts and Peabody's and Emmys, you know, I mean, I'm on the real thing. I'm not like some guy in his basement just talking shit, right? In his underwear. Last time I checked, I even put on a suit for you today. So my country, this country that I love, the United States of America, is telling me I am not allowed to practice my craft as a journalist unless I choose to work for a journalistic entity they like. So if it was the BBC, then it's okay. But if it's somebody else, no, sorry, you can't work for them. We'll arrest you. We'll arrest you if you work for them. This is crazy. And it goes beyond that. There's some things that have happened along the way that I have found really interesting, going back to this whole USAID and who controls our government. So I was chatting with Tucker about this, and he's decided he's going to dedicate a show to it. So we're very excited about that. For those of you who are watching, it's going to take place on the 13th, and this should be a lot of fun. But speaking of Tucker, here's something else. After that interview where Crenshaw is talking to this BBC reporter, the BBC reporter says, by the way, have you ever met Tucker? Have you ever spent any time with him in person? Because you know, obviously you go off on him and hate him and stuff, but have you ever met him? And listen to what to this dude, Dan Crenshaw, says when he thinks he's off mic. Listen.
Have you ever met Tucker?
We've talked a lot.
Now, I don't know. Did you catch that? It's hard to hear, but he says, if I meet him, I'll kill him. Mm-hmm. I'll kill him. He says he's the worst person in the world. Damn it to hell. I mean, son of a gun. Can you? I mean, you're from Texas. Even in Texas, they're not this crude, are they?
No, they aren't. Well, Dan Crenshaw is also from Texas. Exactly. However, I will add in the cover up, the response that his office has done since then. They've tried to just laugh it off, right? They've tried to be like, no, he didn't mean he would actually kill Tucker Carlson. Like, how did you get that from what he said? Well, that's because it's literally what he said.
What he said. He says right there. I mean, I don't know. When we played it, it's kind of hard to hear. But if I meet him, I'll kill him. He's the worst person in the world. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, and especially in the political climate that we're living in, where we now have a president who has survived two assassination attempts, at least that we know of. Yeah, I would take those words pretty seriously. Who has been seen with Trump a time or two. And that's got to be a major concern when you have an administration that is kind of rolling in the way that Trump's is okay, you're going to have a lot of disgruntled, frustrated people. Some of those may be fellow Republicans. And are they going to try to do something about it? That's got to be a major concern right now, especially in today's climate, where, as you were noting, we have a media that is in this position of either you're with the media or you're against the media. Not you're, you know, another independent journalist, you're making your way on Substack and on YouTube and all that. No, you are against the establishment media. That's exactly how they see it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether I'm making too much of this, or because sometimes, you know, we follow these rabbit holes, all of us do from time to time, you know, what Pelosi said and what Trump said and what he wore and what Melania wore and what she did and how he looked at her. And I hate those kinds of stories. But this one, I think, is one that goes beyond that. I mean, when you have a standing U.S. congressman say about an American citizen, who happens to be a journalist, by the way, in this case, or a communicator like Tucker is, a popular one, I would, when I see him, I will kill him. Dude, those are real words. That's not like, you know, I don't know. How could you lessen that? I guess if he said something like, you know, that son of a gun, I can't stand that jerk, you know, he's dead to me. Okay. That's different, right? He's dead to me. That means I don't give a shit about him, right? But to say I would kill him?
Mm-hmm.
Damn. I mean, so here's Tucker now. Tucker's no fan of Crenshaw's. So Tucker now goes to CPAC and a couple of other places. Then he's on his show. Now he's going after Crenshaw. Let's take a listen to that.
So, I mean, Dan Crenshaw obviously is not emotionally prepared to lead anything. And, you know, he's out of control. And I think that he's a really volatile person. I hope he gets help. I mean that. And, but, you know, he's also a pretty sinister person, I would say, whose priorities are not aligned with his party's voters, but also have kind of nothing to do with the United States. So
right.
I object. I mean, I want to be honest. I feel sorry for Dan Crenshaw. I've had conflict with Dan Crenshaw. I felt like he was emotionally out of control. And so I feel sorry for him. But I also think it's not just him. It's a lot of the leadership of that party just doesn't put the United States first at all. And, you know, they all want to suck up to Trump and America first. Really? where's the money going? It's not going here. It's going to the countries whose lobbies control
right.
you.
Right.
You know, that's the truth.
So, Tucker says essentially that this guy's not a real Republican anyway. And the way Tucker phrases his argument against Crenshaw is, politicians like you, and this is an interesting conversation. Politicians like you, Mr. Crenshaw, Tucker seems to be alluding to, you don't care about the American people. You represent the American people, but you don't care about the American people. Because if you're willing to have $200 billion of the American people's tax money that could be used to help fix the border, to help fix our healthcare system, and you use that money to send to countries who have things we don't even have in this country, you know, $200 billion is more than what we spent to rebuild Europe after World War II. So what he's saying is, you're a selfish son of a bitch. You're not a caretaker of the people of the United States. That's what you were elected to do. And unfortunately, you and so many others aren't doing that. You know what? That's actually a good response on the part of Tucker, because that's kind of what's going on.
Well, and it's a response like that that is going to resonate with the American people, because that's exactly how so many of us feel, right? We look at all of the politicians in Washington and we go, okay, you're supposed to represent me and my community, but I don't see you doing anything for us. I see you, you know, signing off on hundreds of billions of dollars in support to Ukraine or signing off on our military budget this year. And then when it comes to those issues that actually involve the American people, that's when Democrats and Republicans fight back and forth and act like they're on opposite sides of the aisle and they just can't come to any sort of agreement. So yeah, it's about time we start calling out those politicians. And it doesn't matter what political party they're supposed to represent. It matters that they really do represent the U.S. establishment. And I think that Tucker Carlson is someone who, you know, obviously previously working for Fox News, he's become independent and he's kind of really got a good grasp on, okay, this is why the American people are frustrated with the establishment, and rightfully so.
Yeah, and you mentioned something earlier about Putin being angry with NATO encroachment. And a lot of people don't know that that NATO encroachment had already begun. Yeah, Ukraine was not officially a NATO country, but they were already getting the hardware. They were getting the military hardware. They were getting the troop assessments, the assistance. They even, you know, we were starting to see the beginning of what were missiles pointed at Moscow around the borders of Ukraine. So a lot of people don't realize this is what Putin saw coming. I mean, Ukraine was not a sovereign country. Ukraine was a country that was not independent. It was being bankrolled by USAID. You know, it was being the entire existence of it was being bankrolled, which is what made Zelensky. And I don't blame him. You know, you put enough money in front of somebody's nose and they go, OK, what the hell? I'll do it. You know, I mean, I think Zelensky originally wanted to have an independent Ukraine that respected Russia, and it was going to be a sovereign country respectful of Russia. He even ran on this. But then he changed when the United States and NATO and the EU started putting, you know, billion-dollar bills. Is there such a thing as a billion-dollar bill? I don't know. But if there is, he got it, so they must have used it. He started using dollars and putting it in front of him, and he said, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I'll get in a proxy war with Russia as long as you guys do the fighting and you guys, you know, provide all the money. But, you know, here's another one, freedom of speech. 90% of the media in Ukraine, bankrolled by USAID. So it wasn't really Ukrainian media. It was USAID media. It was CIA media. It was, these non-NGOs that were running the ship. And we know that in 2014, the end of 2013, the beginning of 2014, you know, we fomented a coup and we got rid of the democratically elected president of Ukraine because we needed somebody else there who was going to put more pressure on Russia. That's a fact. As much as you could just take right now and go to Google and look up the Victoria Nuland phone call and you'll hear the plan. So how does Crenshaw not know this? How do other members of our government not know this? Why doesn't the media report this? These are the questions that I think are very frustrating for those of us looking at this Ukraine thing. Not because, look, wherever the facts fall, that's where I'll report them. You know, that's my job. I mean, that's what I do, right? I call them as I see them. But everything I've seen leads me to believe that the Russians, whether it's a great argument or just an argument, they have, there is another side to this story besides one day Russians woke up and said, I know, we've got nothing to do. Let's just go attack the hell out of some country for no reason whatsoever. And that's the way it's reported to us. And that's wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, that context is so important. And I appreciate you mentioning that because exactly as you were saying, right, Zelensky campaigned in 2019 on peace. He said, hey, we're juggling, you know, European interest, American interest, Russian interest. I want to be the peace candidate. And then if you fast forward to September 2020, that's when Zelensky came out with a new national security objective for Ukraine. And it specifically listed Russia as an aggressor. And it listed their key objective as joining the NATO alliance. Well, guess who's hearing all of that? Vladimir Putin over in Moscow. And he's looking at the situation and going, wait a second. Yeah. We just watched this guy get elected on this peace platform. Now he's ramping up tensions. Fast forward to 2021. And you've got Zelensky talking about wanting to force the Crimean Peninsula back under his control after the people there voted overwhelmingly to return to Russia because it was initially Russian territory.
Why? Why? Because that's what the West wants. They need to stop that naval base from the most important Russian naval base from having access to the Black Sea, having access to the Mediterranean, and which is, by the way, an old principle that the West has always used against Russia. If we can stop them from having naval access, we've stopped them, period. We've taken away their power, right? We've neutered them, for lack of a better term. And that's what Zelensky was willing to help have happen because those were kind of his marching orders, you know? That, I mean, you can listen to Sachs, you can listen to Mearsheimer. They tell you exactly how this happened back then. So to your point, you can't blame Putin for looking at that and saying, guys, look, if you do that, and I've told you, please don't do that. I mean, I've given you everything. I've offered to be a part of NATO. I've offered to do a shield and share our nuclear warheads with you. But you keep saying no, 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 and you keep encroaching. If you continue doing this, I'm going to have to go into Ukraine. And he did.
Yeah, and the U.S. acted like it came out of nowhere, and they just could not understand. And I think that that goes back to your initial point, you know, talking about the freedom that the American people had, that also goes into the freedom that we have with the information around us. And yes, you can get on Google, you can find everything that we're talking about backed up by report after report. But it's the media coverage in the moment, right? The coverage of, oh, Russia is invading Ukraine. This came out of nowhere. Russia is the bad guy. And not including the context, not saying, well, wait a second. How did we get to this point? What has happened in the last 3 years or the last decade? That is the really important point to focus in on, because that's why so many members of the public are now looking to independent media, because they're saying, okay, these are the people who are talking about the things that I'm not getting from CNN or Fox News or the New York Times. So where can I find that information? And luckily, they're able to find that information, but it definitely is not an easy world to be in terms of where we are independently.
Let me ask you about something, speaking of good independent journalists, something that you have covered and done a hell of a good job with, and that's this case of this guy named Gonzalo Lira. Gonzalo Lira, as I understand it, was an American. He was Chilean by birth. Like, I'm an American, but I was born in Cuba. And he was in Ukraine covering the Ukraine story and had been critical of the Ukraine situation. Suddenly he gets thrown in some kind of jail. The Ukrainian, he had reported, by the way, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, on Ukrainian corruption. He gets thrown in jail, and before you know it, he dies in a jail. His father said they beat the shit out of him, and that's eventually what he succumbed to. So here you have a president, Zelensky, who, by the way, has not been elected, who has killed an American journalist, and won't seem to answer for it. That's some serious stuff. I mean, where's that in the news, right?
Yeah, it doesn't fit the narrative. And yeah, you're right. You know, Gonzalo Lira was an interesting case. I know he was a little bit of a polarizing figure, I will say, in terms of his views and what he had to say. But yeah, he was there in the Kharkov region in Ukraine. He was openly reporting, and he was openly critical of the Zelensky government, right? He was calling out the fact that Zelensky was going after any sort of opposition. And there was kind of a back and forth where Lira was initially arrested, and then he came out. He said that he was tortured. He said that he was going to try to flee the country. He was headed for Hungary. And then he went silent. And then it was after that that we got the news that he was back in prison and then that he had eventually died. And for the U.S. government, and I know it was under the Biden administration, I know that they were Zelensky's best friend, but for them to not say anything, for the State Department to just kind of shrug it off and go, oh, well, you know, we viewed him as pro-Russian. This guy wasn't necessarily pro-Russian. He was there on the ground in Ukraine calling out the facts, right? Calling out Zelensky's government.
And even if he was pro-Russian, that doesn't give you the right to fucking kill him.
Exactly. And they talk all the time about, you know, freedom and democracy. But exactly as you noted there, Zelensky's five-year presidential term ended in May 2024. So we're going on close to 1 year now that he has not been the official elected president. He's gone after every form of opposition he can, banned all of the major opposition parties. So even if there was an election in Ukraine tomorrow, it would not be free and fair. He also nationalized the media. And then, yeah, we don't even know where the USAID funding fully went when it goes to all of the different Ukrainian media outlets. So to say that we don't know exactly what's happening on the ground in Ukraine is an understatement when you're looking at the establishment media coverage. And that's why it has become so important to talk to people like what Gonzalo Lira was at the time, right? People on the ground, people who are telling you this is actually what life is like here. And the fact that the U.S. government has been so against that, I think, is very, very telling and should be for the American people. It does not matter if you are an American. It matters if you are following the narrative in this specific conflict.
An American journalist is killed overseas by a foreign government, and our government under the Biden administration says nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Because what? You didn't like him? You didn't like his message? His message was different than yours? Is that what it's all about? My God, what happened to us? Speaking of Zelensky and whether he is a real president or not. As you say, he has not been elected president. He canceled the elections, something we didn't even do. Abraham Lincoln didn't even do during the Civil War. But because of that, recently our president, President Trump, called him a dictator. And I'm being careful of how I say this because he called him, I think, kind of a mediocre comedian and a dictator. Well, now apparently Trump is like pulling back on that somewhat. He was meeting with the British Prime Minister, Starmer, and Trump says, oh, did I say that? Did I call him a dictator, really? I don't know if he was pulling it back or kidding or actually trying to put more attention on it, but he did. And then in those meetings with Starmer, the issue of Ukraine came up, interestingly enough, as did a bunch of other issues. This guy Starmer is really... he's a little Crenshaw-like, if you know what I mean. Yeah. He says the following. This is Starmer. We've discussed a plan today to reach a peace that is tough and fair that Ukraine will help shape. So he's inserting Ukraine in the negotiations because you can tell he cares more about Ukraine, I think, than anything else. And hates Russia with a passion, which I don't understand this, by the way. But let me continue his quote. And that's backed, he goes on to say, by strength to stop Putin from coming back for more. So his whole idea seems to be with his sentence that it's all, as you said earlier, the way many in the West see it, it's all Putin's fault. One day he woke up and just said, I think I'm just going to be bloodthirsty and attack people for no good reason. And now they're making this allusion to the fact that if they allow Putin to get away with this, he'll just do it again, maybe somewhere else. In fact, there seems to be this narrative that Putin wants to take over Europe. Like, Where the hell does that come from? Because I've looked and looked and looked, and I can't find one little thing from anybody, either, you know, Big Cheeks over there, a foreign policy guy, or Putin, saying that they have any intentions on any of these other countries directly.
Yeah, it definitely does not come from Russia. I think that that is, that has been the way that Europe has justified their support for Ukraine, right? It's, we have to support Kiev, or else Putin is going to come for all of us. If he gets Ukraine, then Europe is next. And to a certain extent, they've made that argument successfully in the minds of their public, right? They were able to get people to, you know, take cold showers to stick it to Putin because their energy bills were so high, or they're having to deal with the...
Yeah, that worked real well in Germany. Did you see the last election?
Exactly. That's what, and that worked for so long. And then all of a sudden, now in the last year, you've seen people turn around and go, wait a second, why don't I look towards the party who is going to talk about the policies that I'm passionate about, right? Question why we are sending endless funding to Ukraine. And so I think it's very telling that now you've got these politicians, and Emmanuel Macron, Keir Starmer, a number of them, and especially some of those NATO officials and in the EU, are in this place of looking around going, wait a second, is my propaganda not working anymore, right? How much longer am I going to have in this position? Because the public is starting to wake up. And I think once they fully wake up, there's not going to be any more putting them back to sleep, because they have suffered. They've been through it. They've sacrificed for Ukraine. And it has not led to anywhere close to the results that they were promised. And that's really on NATO. They thought that they could fight this war, you know, isolate Russia, and it has not worked out the way that they thought it was going to 3 years ago.
Isn't that funny? I mean, was it Voltaire who told us about history constantly repeating itself? I mean, what you just said, this scare tactic, in other words, the way the countries in the EU and NATO and stuff constantly scare their populace is to say they're coming after us. They're coming after you next. Get ready, because they're on the way. What an interesting thing. That's exactly what we were told in Korea. It turned out to be bullshit. That's exactly what we were told in Vietnam, which turned out to be bullshit. That's exactly what we were told in Iraq, Libya, Syria, which all turned out to be bullshit. These places have nothing to do with us. We as Americans would be better off keeping that money, taking care of ourselves, maybe helping countries overseas where we can. But we lack things in this country because it's going to those stupid-ass wars that never end. And by the way, let me finish with this, because I just saw something, oh my God, that reminds me of a Crenshaw. I was reading up on Crenshaw last night because I wanted to be prepared, because I know you're always smarter than I am with these, with this stuff. Crenshaw says, listen to this. I found an article. Crenshaw is asked about the fighting in Afghanistan, back when we were in Afghanistan. He says America should continue the war in Afghanistan. Remember, Afghanistan was 20 years.
Yeah.
And what, $7 billion or something, $7 trillion or something like that? 20 years. That's more than the World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the Civil War and the Revolutionary War all combined, right? So he says, and I found this quote where he says, we should continue fighting in Afghanistan. America did not lose this war or any other war. It shouldn't even end one. We gave up on strategic national security interest. So according to this guy, Crenshaw, who is the gist of where you and I started this whole conversation, any war that we get into, we should stay in until the end. Because if it meets our security interests or national interests, I guess whatever he means by that, probably be able to take oil or steal stuff, then we should just continue. And there's no such thing as America losing a war ever. Wow. What an idiot.
Yeah, the idea that, and I would love to live in the world that he lives in, right? Because that's beyond even just American exceptionalism. That is a level of delusion, right? Where he's saying, yeah, sure, let's stay in Afghanistan, where we're throwing hundreds of billions of dollars into this country on a regular basis. We're fueling corruption. I mean, we all saw the Afghanistan papers. It was made very clear that not only is there no winning this war, but the Taliban was getting increasingly more powerful, even as the U.S. military was there stationed occupying the country. The U.S. was actively replacing the Taliban with the Taliban. And the fact that he had that mentality then, it does not surprise me whatsoever that he's like, yeah, let's just stay in Ukraine. Maybe Russia will fall apart one of these days. If we just hold out hope and put on a few more sanctions, then Moscow is going to crumble and it will all come together eventually.
And you know what? And maybe final point. Here's what, it's not as simple as just fighting a war and winning and spending more money and rah, rah, and look at me. I wear a patch on my eye. I'm a captain or a pirate, or I'm tough. I was in the military. I know I get briefings. You don't. No. Every one of these actions has a reaction and a reaction to the reaction. The reason these poor people in Wisconsin complain about, you know, too many immigrants in their community is not because they're hateful people. What they're saying is, how did we get to the point where these people want to live here? And here's my point. My parents didn't want to leave Cuba. They left Cuba for geopolitical reasons. The people from Honduras who now live in the United States would love to be back in their own damn country. They come here because certain geopolitical forces forced them here, including U.S. assaults by the CIA in their country, like in Guatemala, where we took out a democratically elected president and caused the deaths of 200,000 people when we started and fomented a civil war there. These Middle Eastern people who are ending up in Europe, who are causing this strife in places like Poland and the Czech Republic and Chechnya and these other countries, Hungary, pardon me, they would have rather stayed in their country. A guy from Afghanistan would love to stay in Afghanistan, trust me. A person from Syria wants to be in Syria. We all want to be who we are. These people are being transferred, essentially, from one country to another by policies gone awry. And too often, we don't deal with this part of the story, and the Crenshaws of the world don't understand that. They think it's all me, 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 my people, my people. Well, it's a big world out there, and you got to look at it not from a unipolar perspective, but from a multipolar perspective. And thank God that we have an administration right now, never thought I'd say this, in Donald Trump and others, Vance, Rubio, et cetera, who are fighting this fight now, finally. It's been 50, 60, 70 years in the making, and we're finally seeing somebody say, you know, these things have repercussions, and we may have to change our ways, and enough of this administrative state or deep state or whatever the hell we want to call it, running roughshod over our government. It's wrong.
Yeah, and it's very telling to me the statements that they're making, because I think that that is exactly what the American people want to hear. And now it's going to be on the American people to make sure that the administration continues and that they follow through with these statements. Because, yes, tell us what we want to hear, but you also have to do what we want to do and pursue execute that policy. Yeah, and I, you know, we're only a few weeks into the Trump administration. I think it's going to be a very interesting 4 years here.
They're going fast, though, Rachel. They're going fast. I hope they can. You're right, though. You know, it's one thing to say, it's another thing to do. So you're absolutely right. Rachel Blevins, great podcaster, sanctioned, and a good friend, loyal colleague. It's really great to be able to have this conversation with you. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And what we do here, by the way, did I tell you my name is Rick Sanchez? Oh, sorry if I didn't. My name is Rick Sanchez. And I call this Journalistically Speaking only because I kind of take pride in being a real journalist, since most of the people out there are fakers. So I do this now a couple times a week, and I try and get smart people like Rachel to join me. And if you like it, let me know. If you don't, let me know as well. And if you get a chance, click that little like thing down there, wherever the hell it is. And subscribe. We'll see you next time.